Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast. Hey, everybody, it's David Nagel. Welcome to the Successful Mind Podcast. And it is a true honor for me to bring Lisa Nichols in as our guest today. She is one of the world's most requested motivational speakers, and I can tell you why. I will tell you why shortly, as well as a media personality and corporate CEO whose global platform has reached nearly 80 million people. From a struggling single mom on public assistance to a millionaire entrepreneur, Lisa's courage and determination has inspired fans worldwide and helped countless audiences break through to discover their own untapped talents and infinite potential. As a founder and chief executive officer of Motivating the Masses, Inc., Lisa has developed workshops and programs that have transformed lives and to countless men and women and altered the trajectory of business throughout the country and across the world. Lisa's extraordinary story of transforming her own life from public assistance for her family to leading a multi-million dollar enterprise is the inspiration behind her bold mission to teach others that it is possible to do the same. Today, fans worldwide revere Lisa for her mastery of teaching people of how to accomplish unfathomable goals and tap into their limitless potential. Lisa, welcome. Welcome.
Thank you. I think that's probably the most awkward part about the entire interview is sitting through that.
But I love reading them. I love hearing people's stories. I think it's just fantastic. And your story is so amazing. I just want to tell everybody real quick. I first met you about 10 years ago, and then I saw you speak through a mutual friend of ours who's passed now. But then I had the opportunity. I didn't know you were even speaking at Archangel in Toronto. And I was brought in to speak there. And then we had to find out we were having dinner one night. And then we got to know each other.
Yeah.
And that was an incredible dinner, by the way, everything that was going on at that table. But watching you the next day speak was, it's a memorable moment in my life. Mm. And I would say to anybody that gets the opportunity to sit in the audience and to see your command of the stage and the way that you move people and take them through a process of story and yes. And, you know, like it, thank you. I mean, I just want to
you're
thank
welcome.
You for it.
You're welcome. Thank you. I thank you very much for that acknowledgement. I don't take it lightly. People often say, I'm sure you've heard this a million times. And I go, each time I'm grateful. I don't take it for granted. I view myself, people ask me, who did I study? And I guess who you study speaks to who you, most want to be like, if I look at it. And while I've studied, I'm well studied. I consider myself a career student. The people that I work to emulate has been Nelson Mandela, Mother Teresa, Mahatma Gandhi, Dr. Martin Luther King. When I say I studied them to the fiber of their essence. So when I hear you say that, David, and I hear you just give me such great honor, I also look back on the moment to go, what did it feel like from his perspective? What was he seeing? And I believe that element that for so many years, I could not put a word to it. People would ask me, what is that that you're doing? And why does it seem so? And I go, I don't know. And I really didn't know what it was. But now as I've gotten older and more mature in the industry, and I've heard the question asked so many times, and I've really taken responsibility with needing to find an answer so that we can all understand a little better. And I realize that it is that humanity charge to look into ourselves to become the greatest version of ourselves for each other.
Yes.
If I could, and I've never said it like that before. So I'm literally discovering the phrases as we speak to go, what I did in that room that day, because I do it everywhere I go, is to go, like, we are each the Mahatma Gandhi and the Mother Teresa and the Cesar Chavez and the Martin Luther King. We are each that. We each have a responsibility to further the conversation. And what I want to be is an igniter for you to discover your part of the conversation. You know, that all of these great leaders, may they rest in peace, deserve the right to rest in peace, because we're hard at work. So
it's interesting that you say that you mentioned those names, because now I can see that in your speech. I recognize what you did in that room through those people. And your authenticity is magnetic. You can't be holding anything back to do. I mean, I've been speaking for 25 years, so I know you can't hold anything back to move an audience the way that you did that. And you so brilliantly brought that room together.
Yeah. Thank you. I take responsibility for my dash while I'm here.
Yeah.
I want to do my part, number one. And number two, I seek and desire to ignite as many brother fires and sister fires, twin flames of people who are saying, sis, I'll do it with you. I'll pick up my part of the mantle. I feel like we're in a very long life cycle of a relay race, and we're handing each other the batons. And while it felt like 50 years ago, 80 years ago, 1, 2, 7, 30 people at a time held the baton, because of our platforms now with social media, because of our awareness now, because Black and white and Asian and man and woman can play together now, because we can have a global conversation at the exact same time right now, that we get to have so many batons being run simultaneously. And so I'm just excited to be here now with brothers like you, to go, look at us, this Black woman from South Central Los Angeles, you know, and we're having this conversation right now. Like, how dynamic is that? How delicious is that? That we were 50 years ago not supposed to have a likened conversation, and yet we're having it on the internet, right?
Yeah,
and
right.
We get to push it out to the world, man. All bets are off. We get to do anything now.
And you and I didn't come from that.
No.
You didn't start there. I didn't start there. But that's what I want to get to is, what was your journey? How did you go from there to here?
You know, you said something before we started recording, you said, I want to talk to you about how you became so confident because you didn't start like this. And I don't have a packaged set of interview questions, as you know. I don't want to know what you're going to ask me. I want to live in the moment with you. I don't want to rehearse to do me.
Yeah.
And so when you ask that question, I begin to just kind of chew on it in my head. Oh, how did I become this confident? Right? How did I? And it's funny because we speak about our lives as if it's one. I've heard, let me just say this. I've heard us speak about it like, what did you want to do when you grow up, or how did you get to this place? And I've heard answers, and I've probably given some answers that made it feel as if it were one moment, one design, one agenda, and we've been living it out for the last 25, 30 years.
Yeah.
And the reality is, when I started this journey to become this confident, it wasn't to become this confident. David, it was to get away from my fear, get away from the insecurity that riddled my mind. It was to get away from the constant questioning, Was I doing enough? Was I being enough? Was I enough? When I first started this journey, it wasn't running towards something. It was trying to outrun something else. If I'm gonna be really honest with you. So when I started this journey of transformation and empowerment, I had no idea that it was transformation and empowerment. For me, it was enough is enough. And I don't want to live forever stuck in this mindset. I don't want to live forever stuck in this financial zip code. I don't want to live forever stuck in this limiting set of beliefs. I don't want to live stuck in who I can't be or who I will never be because of my mocha skin, my full lips, my round hips, and my kinky hair, and my geographical origin.
Right.
It was more of a, I refuse. I will defy the conversation that anybody's having, including me, about me. Because when we have conversations about lack of limitations and societal programming, it always seems to be an external thing. Like people, no one can hold me down. Well, who's someone? Because I realized someone was me first. You know, in my culture and in my conversation, there was always the conversation about the man, meaning the white man, yeah. And who I couldn't be in his eyes. Well, to me, someone else's eyes were so far after my own eyes. Like before I can challenge societal's belief system about me, I needed to challenge my own belief system about me. And oh, by the way, that kept me busy for quite some time. So I became this courageous, confident individual first by recognizing who I was didn't match who I believed myself to be able to become. That's number one. My current circumstances did not match who I saw myself as being able to be. It was incongruent. And that's not an overnight, that's not an aha moment. That's not, I got it and let's just fix that. Shoot. Yeah. That's the sobering mindset of saying, I am not congruent in my daily behaviors with who my mind sees myself to be. So there's this cognitive dissonance going on. And cognitive dissonance is when you mentally see yourself further along than what you're doing and right. where you are.
Right.
There's called no good sleep. There's no good sleep at night. there's no good sleep. And so there was no evidence, David, that I could become that person. There was just a belief system that I should be that person. So number one is I began to see who do I see myself as I should be. And the person that I should be didn't agree with my community. It didn't agree with my culture. It didn't agree with my religious background. It didn't agree with anything. I didn't know her, David. I didn't know her. There was no physical evidence of anyone in my circle, my immediate circle, being the person or close to the person I saw myself to be. And I saw that because I just started reading and questioning. Well, if Stephen Covey says a person should have that, aren't I a person? If Napoleon Hill says a person should have that, aren't I that person? Like literally, I started questioning anything that didn't agree with what I read someone could have. That was number one. That was seed.
Yeah, and that story that you told about the swimming, when you won that swimming, and the seed that your aunt planted, it was your aunt, right?
She put my grandmother. My grandmother.
I'm sorry, your grandmother.
That's okay.
In your mind, those things like that. I was thinking about that for 2 days after you told that story, and I was thinking to myself, you know something? Those little things that happen that somebody puts in our mind. They start to grow. It starts to get some sunshine and some water, and that
thing man,
starts to grow.
Man, and you can't unknow it.
You can't unknow it is right.
And you can't unknow it. So you can't ever outrun what you know. Everywhere you go, there you are. You can never unknow it. Man, So some of your best thoughts can either feed you or hunt you.
Yeah.
And when you're trying to play small, they're going to hunt you. And when you're living into your greatness, they feed you. And I could not shake it. Let me tell you, from the day my grandmother told me that story you're talking about, quitters never win, baby, and winners never quit. And I don't care what you do or what you're going through. You don't have the option of quitting. So please, sweetheart, take quitting off the table. Man, that would haunt me. Haunt me later. Because there are things I wanted to just stop doing because it was ostracizing to keep going. It was scary to keep going. It was lonely to keep going. It was expensive to keep going.
Yes, it is.
It was inconveniencing to keep going. And yet I knew what my grandmother said when I was 15. And so the journey to this woman was paved with learning something that wouldn't let me sleep at night and being responsible for what I had learned. When Stephen Covey said in Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, imagine your funeral 3 years from today, what will people say about you? What kind of friend were you? What kind of family member were you? What kind of community member were you? How did you contribute to society? I read that, David, when I was 25 years old. It haunted me. For 10 years, it haunted me because I wanted something to be said about me that I hadn't earned yet. Ooh.
That hurt.
Did you hear what I said?
I heard it. Yes, I heard it.
I wanted something to be said about me that I hadn't earned yet. And so I had to go live the story that I wanted to be told about my life. OMG.
Yeah, that's it right there.
That you're writing your eulogy. You're writing your eulogy right now by the way you live, the way you love, the way you forgive, the way you are, the way you ask for forgiveness, the way you give yourself 1,000 second chances, the way you hug someone, how present you are to someone. You're writing your eulogy. And some people would say that's morbid, but that's the most realistic thing you can think of, that if I'm writing my legacy, if I'm writing my eulogy, let me write the story that I want to be told.
It's the leveler. That's where we're all headed. We're all dying. That's the truth. And it gets to be a heaven or hell experience. What's it going to be?
And your legacy will far outlive your lifetime. When I learned that, when I was asked to deliver the closing remarks for Dr. Martin Luther King's doing the inauguration celebration of his statue, his monument in Washington, D.C.
Right.
And they asked me to deliver the closing message. And it was 40 years after Dr. King had been assassinated. And the reality that his legacy will live a lot longer than his lifetime. That was powerful for me to be there delivering this closing message amongst his family members and the people that marched beside him that were still alive. It was very sobering to see that if you focus on, David, writing your legacy, not your lifetime, you'll be far more committed to the highest path that God, that the universe can give you to write. Because your legacy can live 60, 80, 100 years past your lifetime. And so your most selfless act could be to write a legacy more powerful than any lifetime story could ever be.
That's Woo. Beautiful.
To update your address Woo. Or that, for payment
that is super,
press
super,
to hear
super
this information again.
Sorry,
hold on. Star
oh,
six.
I apologize.
To return to the main menu.
Your phone is talking. Okay.
Sorry about that. Can you edit
that?
No,
that's okay. You're fine. And to think about how powerful his legacy is since then, since the 60s, like
right.
It more powerful after his lifetime than in his lifetime.
You and I are together now. Archangels exist. Look at the event that we reconnected at. Yeah. Look at how powerful. Look at the room. Whenever I'm standing in front of a room, when I'm in Kyiv, or when I was in Ireland, or when I was in Taipei, or when I was in New Zealand and Australia and places that I would never even be at, I would say on stage, I am here because someone was responsible for their dash.
That's right.
Man.
You know,
man.
You want to hear something weird? I don't think I've ever told anybody this story, but this is the God's truth. So I was raised in Chicago in an Italian family that was extremely racist. And I was listening to the conversation that people are having at the table, right? But I'm also a little boy watching Sesame Street, who was integrating the world, what Jim Henson was doing at that time. And I think that what I saw there put enough of a question into my mind that I never got into it. Because all my life I questioned, why do you think, and it wasn't just black people, it was anybody. You could be Irish and they didn't like
anybody them. Different.
Anybody different. Why is it? Do you have any logical thing that you can tell me about this other than the stereotypical BS?
And they keyword never, logical. Keyword logical, right?
Yeah, keyword logical, exactly. And I remember when I had to take a stand for it in my own life. When I really happened was when I started having children. And people in my family would come over and I would throw them out if they didn't change their language. I said, you're not talking like that in front of my kids. I don't believe that. That is utter poison. And as you're talking about, you've said it like three times now. We're here. We're having this conversation. We've met each other.
Yeah.
And I thought.
We broke bread together. My grandmother says a friendship is truly launched when you break bread together.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But I was thinking to myself, why didn't I turn out like other people that I still know that were children when I was a child? And that's what popped into my mind, Sesame Street. Because
isn't that powerful?
I think it's amazing. I think it's absolutely amazing because it's the seed. It's like your grandmother gave you that seed.
The catalyst.
Yeah. I got a seed and it grew into something better.
Yeah. And then the most responsible thing you can do to humanity. Now, let me preface this with, I'm far from perfect. You're far from perfect. So it's not about living a perfect life or trying to paint a perfect picture for someone. But what it's about is perfectly managing our imperfections to be of greatest contribution to the planet and society.
Yeah.
And if you, back to your first question, how did I navigate to this place where I am today? I said, God, use my imperfection, use my humanity so that I can make this world a better place, to take the seed, to plant my own seeds where I can. And when you say, you told a story and I chewed on the story for 2 days, I go, ooh, seed planted, right? To not try to be anyone's everything, but to be a seed in their garden. What seed can I plant? Am I giving to my environment or am I taking from my environment? You know, can I be a provider and a receptacle? Can I be a teacher and a student? If I'm a good teacher, it's because I am a phenomenal student, a phenomenal student. I love learning what I don't know, and I love relearning what I thought I knew. And so, you know, I struggled through school for 12 years. My highest grade in school was a C+ for 12 years. And I worked very hard to get my C's. I worked very, very hard. So when I say a C, don't think a C was because I skated by. I worked really hard. I failed my last English class that I ever took. And I got a D- in my last speech class that I ever took. I thought it was because I was dumb. I always treated myself as if I were dumb. When someone tried to initiate me learning something in my early years, I would stop them and say, wait, go slow. I learn slow. And so I labeled myself. I followed the labels that my teachers had given me. And it wasn't until I was in my mid-20s that I found out that I'm actually functionally dyslexic. So that was my slow learning challenge, was that I reversed the words. So it takes me to this day, it takes me about 3 months to finish one book, if I ever finish it. Oftentimes, I don't finish it because it's taken too long, but it's because I have to reverse all the words. And for so long, David, I judged myself. I judged myself for my learning disability. And I didn't see it as my superpower.
Right.
And I think that you're being raised in a racist family, you've learned to make it your superpower. Because when we met, you made me feel instantly like a sister. You came to me with this sense of humility and gratitude and honor. And you would have to tell me that you were raised in that family. Nothing in your lifestyle shows that. And somehow I believe it's made you more compassionate.
I agree. I think so.
Yeah.
I just have a love for people, all people. And you know, a lot of it I owe to our mutual friend, Bob Proctor, because he was my mentor for a long time.
I love Bob.
And he taught me, like when I would travel with him and I would speak with him, he would say to me, he would find somebody who was just being nasty. And he would say, go find something beautiful in that person.
Ah.
See what you can find beautiful in that person. And he was the one that said to me, if you're going to be a good leader, you have to be a good student, and you need to know when to be which. And I was like, okay. So, I mean, he, you know, I owe so much to that man. But he taught me to see people different. He taught me to look into their heart and look into their soul and find something good about them, even if they're being the worst that they could ever possibly be.
Yeah.
He told me the stories about when he would go into prisons and teach the people in prisons the same thing. And it's life-changing. And I'll tell you what, and I wouldn't be where I am if I didn't have that viewpoint about people, because
right.
I just see where the moment you get into judgment, it's over.
Right. You contract. And everything you want and everywhere you aspire to go is in expansion. And so every thought, every choice you make is either going to contract you or expand you. There's no gray. There is no maybe. There is no limbo. It's either expanding you or it's contracting you. No ifs, ands, and buts about it. That is very black and white, right? And so are you in an expanding thought? Are you in a contracting thought? And it's easy to look at fear and intention. Intention is expanding and fear is contracting. It's easy to find those, but there's so many other forms that are not as clear, like color and nationality, like finances, like are you trusting your investment in you? Are you blaming it on who you're investing in? I always tell people when they buy a program from mine, I always say, don't bet on the horse. I'm the horse. It's the program. Bet on the jockey. You're the jockey.
Yeah.
You're riding the program, you know, and that I needed to learn that, because I would think, oh, is this program going to do it for me? And no program by anybody will do anything for you. No, it's information. That's it. How will the jockey ride the information?
Yeah.
How will the jockey ride into the sunset? When I got that, I don't ever bet on the horse. Don't ever bet on the horse. Bet on the jockey. I'm the jockey. And so, gosh, I begin to go, okay, so how do I ride? Do I hold on? Do I jump off? Do I give too much power to the horse, the program, the purpose, the relationship? Like, a relationship doesn't make you. You're the jockey. How are you riding the relationship, right? And so when I begin to realize, oh, I need to really hold the jockey responsible, that was another form of my journey to get to the person that I am today, was to go, I'm the jockey. And because early in my career, I hired people with really big titles and lots of credentials and lots of success and tons of books behind their names and MBAs and PhDs and double PhDs, because I was afraid. I felt like I didn't have enough letters behind my name, that I was young. I was you know, when I really launched my career, I was in my early to mid 30s. And most of the people that were where I wanted to be were in their, you know, mid 50s. And so age was against me and nationality was against me and gender was against me and education was against me. And I realized that I was stacking the chips against myself. So I was betting against me until I asked myself the one question: as the jockey, how do you ride? And the answer, David, was I don't let go. And when I began to bet on my ability and not my origin, not my gender, not my socioeconomic status, but how I ride, the integrity, the length, the dignity, the determination in which I drive through, when I begin to shift the conversation, then the conversation have to shift. And that's when I begin to realize, hold on, it's not how I arrived to this point, but how am I going to get to the next point? And I begin to teach that to other people. And when you collect enough evidence, what I teach now is your body of work, your body of being, who you are being is in the evidence. If you are flaky, if you're inconsistent, if you're follow through, then it shows in the evidence and let's read the evidence. But if you are solid, then it's in the evidence. And let's if the evidence can live in the court of law, then the evidence can live in your life. And so so that's one of the things that keeps me really confident, is that I keep looking at my evidence. I don't focus on, and I have evidence to say I could move slower at times. I have evidence to say, hold on, seek more counsel. I look at all my evidence, not just the evidence to shape the story that I want to be shaped, but all of it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. When did you realize you had a gift for speaking?
Early on, when 2002, I was speaking at an entrepreneurs conference. They just asked me to speak, and I'd never spoken really before in front of a diverse audience of entrepreneurs who were far, far more successful than I was at the time. And every time I spoke, I would witness with the audience what you witnessed in Toronto. And I would be as wild. I'm going, wow. And I promise you, David, I'm going to tell you something I haven't told anyone. I kept saying every time it worked, I go, whoa, that thing worked again. I'm not quite sure what that thing is, but it worked again. I'm not sure how long this thing will last, but I didn't even know what to do with it. But my biggest challenge for many years was managing the result of what would happen when I spoke. And at the time, I hadn't learned how to articulate exactly what I was doing. I've since then identified what are the things. So I literally took 7 days in my office, locked myself in my office, canceled all my appointments because I kept getting asked, how did you learn how to do this? And there wasn't a structured way. And so I wanted to understand what I was doing. So I locked myself in my office for 7 days and I started putting a title to every unconscious technique I was doing. And what I did is I brought from my unconscious to my conscious. So, and 7 days later, I came up with, at the time, about 9 different techniques. Now I've recognized more and it's about 17. But I've been doing them for years. I just didn't know. So let me give you an example. So now I put up really horrible names on them to show you I wasn't trying to market them. So I do this thing called what I call the audience connection formula. Me, we, you. And I would unconsciously do it where I would say, there was a time in my life when we have a tendency to, have you ever experienced me, we, you? And I unconsciously did it. And what it would do is it would make the audience feel like we're climbing together, right? I, I'm the I'm your girl. I'm with you.
Yeah.
And so you saw it in Toronto.
Did. Absolutely.
And I did that. And then I would do this thing that I've called the Valley. I just like gave it like really probably horrible names, but I needed to give it a name to identify it. And the Valley was, here are all my big credits. You saw that in my introduction video or my bio, like you read. And then I would take them down to a dark time in my life, all time low. And then we come out together. And that was the Valley. And I did that because I didn't want to stay on a mountaintop. I didn't want to start. And I noticed other speakers would start on a mountaintop and then teach you technique and then end up on the mountaintop unconsciously. All of us did that. And I went, well, how do I go down and get the people? Because remember, I'm studying Dr. Martin Luther King, Nelson Mandela, Mahatma Gandhi, Cesar Chavez, Mother Teresa. So in my studies, I had to find a way to go get the people. So I called it the Valley. So here I am up here. You read my bio. My host will read my bio. I go down to one low point, not my lifetime, one low moment. For you, the low moment in Toronto was the quitters never win and winners never quit. I took you to a moment when I felt hopeless. And then I took you back out again. And in doing that, I grabbed the whole room.
You did.
You did.
The whole room was in that race with you.
Yeah. And so the way they were in the race with me was this other technique that I then, and mind you, it took me years, David, years to understand what I was doing. And so I love your question now. 10 years ago, it would have baffled me and frustrated me because you had a right to ask that question. How did you connect to the audience like that? I just didn't know how to articulate it. And so the way that I had the whole audience in the race with me was another technique called show me. And so unpacking, what I call unpacking the story, telling you what I was thinking, telling you how I was feeling, painting a backdrop as if you were watching an oral movie with me. So anyway, it's taken me years to figure out how to do it in such a way where I could teach others and in such a way where I could hand over a technique to someone, because I believe that we all should have the opportunity to move a room at a cellular and a soulful level.
Yep.
That if you were given the opportunity to hold a microphone and speak in front of one person, 10, 100, or 10,000, there's a responsibility to ignite an internal flame in them from such a cellular place that you create change every time you open your mouth. And you don't do it for your credits. You do it because we're supposed to do it. Yeah. And that's what you saw me doing. And that's what you do. And so for a long time, I knew I had a gift. For a very short time, have I been able to make my gift someone else's skill set. So honestly, for a long time, it felt like a gift and a burden. Because I didn't know, I don't want to be the only person to have this impact on people.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah,
absolutely. I'm a change agent way beyond being a speaker or a CEO. And just in the last 5 years, literally just the last 5 years, have I been able to go, oh, here's what I've been doing, naming it, labeling it, and being able to hand it over. And so it's been a long journey, and I'm not the best. I'm not one of a kind. I just have I have an innate gift. And I believe that when you have a gift, it's your job to find a way to make your gift someone else's skill set. And that's a hard calling. It's not easy.
No, it's not. And, you know, it's interesting because when I first started in this industry, I was recommended, I don't remember who it was. Somebody said to me one time, oh, you should go learn how to speak, because I had never learned how to speak. And Bob was a good proponent of going to do things like that, but he saw me speak And he pulled me aside and he said to me, he said, you know, the great, I said, you, Bob, where do you think I should go to learn how to speak? And he said, the greatest speakers, the greatest orators in history didn't have a speaking coach.
Yep.
He said they spoke from their heart. So as I was going through my journey, and what I noticed that you do, that I also do, is we transfer belief in that audience.
Yeah.
That transference of belief allows somebody to move from their situation forward.
Yeah.
Because they don't have it themselves. They have the seed, they have the desire, but they don't have the belief they can do it yet. And belief is one of those evidence things, Lisa.
Yeah.
You don't have it in your life if you don't believe it.
Yeah. But it's key to recognize that when we talk about an audience, it's an audience of two.
That's
it's
right.
An audience of your children. It's an audience of your parents. It's an audience of your siblings. It's an audience of your coworkers or your employees. It's not an audience of students who came to see you solely. It's not an audience of social media who's chiming into your Facebook Live or your Instagram. It's an audience of the people sitting in front of you that you have been given the opportunity to inspire. I talk to a lot of people who say, I tell a lot of my students, don't turn on. Don't turn on. That means you're performing. Be, do, walk, talk with authenticity.
Yeah.
So you don't have to turn on, right? Be the conversation in the dark of the night when nobody's looking.
Yeah.
Be integrity. Be forgiveness. Be joy. Be humility in an apology. Fall on the sword sooner, quicker, faster. Own your breakdowns sooner, quicker, faster. Forgive sooner, quicker, faster. Love the perceivingly unlovable. Be the conversation. Expand. Stand up and leap in the face of fear. Don't wait till the fear is gone to leap. Leap right. With your knees knocking. And in that, you don't have to turn on.
No. That's why I asked you before we started about the self-acceptance and the self-awareness.
Yeah.
Because when I see, and all those people that you studied too, right? Like,
yeah. You
could tell that they had that. I remember when I didn't know that, and I would study those people, and I would think, what is it?
What is that?
Like,
yeah.
I couldn't even put words to it. And then one day I was like, there's no doubt there. There's no,
there's
no hesitation there.
That's it.
Right?
That's it.
I started noticing what they didn't. Yeah.
There's the I know, like I know, like I know, like I know. Now, that doesn't mean I know the outcome. It's not that. It means I know I'll be okay with the outcome.
Right.
Very different. Very different because, you know, and mind you got to watch out because we're leaders and leaders are recovering control freaks at all times. At all times, we're recovering. We release control, then we take it again. We release control, and we take it again, right? And so the I know like I know like I know is the I know I'm going to be okay. I'm going to fly. I'm going to dip a little bit or I'm going to fall. And either way, I know I'll be okay. And so playing big is having confidence in you that you can handle the game, whether you win it, whether it's a draw, or whether in some people's case, they call it a loss. For me, a loss is a lesson. They both start with L. I'm not going to lose solely. I'm going to have a lesson. Yeah. I'm going to draw every lesson out of the cost of the loss, right? And so the confidence is in I'm confident that I can get back up. I'm not saying I'm invincible, but I am saying I'm intentional. And so I don't have to win all the time by the definition people have of winning. I just need to be willing to bet on myself again.
That's right.
Yeah. And I tell people, I win more now. I win more now because I've lost so much.
And by losing so much, I've lost friends. I've lost relationships. I've lost hundreds of thousands of dollars and money. I've lost time. David, I've lost health. I've lost my wellness. I've lost everything. And because I came back, I've proven to myself that I can play big. So you asked about the confidence. The confidence comes in pressing reset 1,000 times. The confidence comes in feeling like I'll never get up from this particular loss, this particular time, and then getting back up. The confidence comes from thinking that I couldn't trust my picker again, my decisions again, and then making another decision anyway. Not that it worked out, but I made it.
Yeah.
So the biggest misnomer, misbelief, is thinking that confidence comes in it all happening correctly. And when it happens correctly, that takes care of itself. Who can you be when there's a disruption? Not expecting it, not looking for it, but who can you be if and when it occurs? My confidence is because I know who I am in the face of breakdown. I know who I've become in the face of betrayal. I know who I am in the face of frustration. I know her. I shaped her. I had to grow her up. I trust her. And so everything else takes care of itself. I've never said that before.
That's beautiful.
I've never said that before.
But that's the journey, isn't it?
Oh my gosh. And there's some things you can only understand 40% intellectually.
Amen there.
You will never get 100% of the learning. My grandmother used to say, baby, just live long enough. And I never understood that. I never understood that statement. She would irritate me with that. She would just drive me crazy with it. Baby, just, I go, no, grandma. I want to know now. She goes, baby, just live long enough. And, you know, amen. 35 years later from when she first said it, I understand. I understand the beauty of experience. Experience is so beautiful because it teaches me who I am. It teaches you who you are in those moments. And you get to see your areas of improvement and your areas of celebration. Like what I love about experiencing something similar 10 years later is I get to see my evolution.
Yeah, that's right.
I get to see my compassion. I get to see how I can step out of my shoes, and it's not all about what I'm experiencing. And I get to step in my betrayer's shoes, in my perpetrator's shoes. I get to step in their shoes and have more compassion for them in the moment while I'm still healing. I can even learn how to bless the experience that's so incredibly painful that I would never want anyone to go through. I can bless the experience because it gives me a chance to see my evolution.
Yeah.
Oh, otherwise you're going to ask, why am I going through this again? Give yourself the answer. Give yourself the answer. You're going through this again to see who you are right now. Are you in the same place you were the last time you went through it 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 3 years ago? Or have you evolved? And is this just your opportunity to see and embrace your evolution?
And so many people sit around and all they do is measure their losses and they don't measure their wins. So they don't even see the wins.
And then it's a true loss.
That's right. Then
it's a true loss. Yeah. I love this conversation, first of all. Thank you for having. I'm in an interesting place. I don't use the word interesting very often because it's such a non-committal word that doesn't commit to anything. But I'm in a very intriguing place in my life right now where I just came through a very difficult time because I had a felon. I had a felon consult in my company. I didn't know he was that. And so I was frauded. And my attorney said it would cost me about $300,000 at most to get through it. It's cost me $1.8 million. He was slightly off. Slightly.
Just a little.
Just a little. And I am now far enough in it and enough expanded where I can now tap into my grace and I can tap into my compassion. And I couldn't see it at first. I was too angry. I was too hurt. I was shocked. I was scared. I was everything. I was everything simultaneously. And I'm in that space where I'm $1.8 million into clearing up this fraud that happened to me. And I'm also in the biggest growth in my company that I've ever been. So I had to become a really, really kick-butt CEO. So I had to grow up. I thought I'd already grown up. I thought I was already doing amazing business. And I became more lean and more mean. I drove down in 3 years, I drove down $1 million in operational cost. So I saved the company $1 million. I've increased my profit margin across the board, across the entire company by 25 to 30% on every program. Wow. I became the CEO I never knew. Never knew. I didn't know this one. I mean, I took all the emotion out of the business, and I'm a woman, and I got a lot of women in my company.
Yeah.
So we're sweating emotion, right? I took all the emotion out. I said, it's an understanding that I love you. I got to do some kick butt business.
That's right.
And I was the absolute best parts of me were born in the last 3 years. I saw David the coal being pressed and pressed and pressed. And I just got literally, you're the first interview that I'm ever saying this. I just got glimmer of my diamond. And I don't even know how to articulate the gratitude because it's so mixed. The gratitude is mixed with the mud and the hurt and the pain and the shame that comes with being frauded and the ickiness and all of the stuff. And the best of me was born. Does that make sense?
Does it make sense? Well, so you got a brother in this experience. I went in for $5 million. $5 million,
okay.
I had somebody take. So I know exactly what you're going through.
You know where I am.
And it caused me to be a better businessman for sure, because it was a $1,300 decision that cost me $5 million.
It was not
reading the contract, not wanting to pay my attorney to go over the contract.
Yeah.
That I signed with this company.
Yeah. No, I got it. I got the best of you had to be born so everything would not die away.
That's right.
I'll say that again, because someone's listening to this and you got to hear this. The best of you must be born so that everything that you've ever wanted, desired, and worked for will not die away. And in order for that to happen, you actually got to kill the ego.
Huh.
Kill the ego. I had to kill the shego. I had to wake up. I got my own. You got yours. I got my own. It's a woman thing. I had to kill my shego every day. And I had to, my spiritual mentor said years ago, I didn't understand. And she goes, wake up every day and then die to sell. I didn't get it. Didn't understand it. Nowhere did I get it. And I was on Larry King years later, and someone asked a really hard question. The Secret Teachers were on. It was me. It was John Assaraf. It was Jack Canfield, Joe Vitale.
Yeah.
Two of us were on, and it was a very hard interview, and he had to oppose The Secret. But he also, in addition to opposing The Secret, he had people calling in and opposing. So America was calling in and opposing, and we had to defend it live. And someone called in and asked a very hard question. She said, if someone is, if a child is stricken with cancer, are you saying that they created that in their own lives? And I said, I don't know why we even have cancer. I don't know why such a horrible thing was created, but I do know that we don't get one lesson that we're not meant to learn from. And my spiritual mentor was watching the show, and she said, you died to self. You didn't let your ego take over. You were willing to say, I don't know. I don't know. But what I do know is that we're not given anything that's not meant to make us stronger.
I remember and when so, you did that.
Yeah. And what you had to do, and what I've had to do, and what so many people, what someone listening to this might have to do, is you might have to be willing to put your ego, die to self, so the best part of you can be born. Your humanity is born through your humility. Your true humanity is born through your humility. Now, ego has to come along for the ride, because ego gets us on stage. Ego gets you to say, I could do it. You have to bring ego along in the car, but you can never let ego drive.
There you go. There you go. And you know, another thing that I've really learned, and I've also seen it in studying other people, is that the trials and tribulations, like the felon that you had that takes the money, the bigger the problem that you have, the bigger you're being set up for the bigger thing in your life. You got something so big coming in your life that you needed to have that experience, but you don't know it yet, but you'll know it when it comes.
Listen, the pressure is preparing you for the rise.
That's right.
So it's all matched. The bigger you play, the bigger your breakdowns. If you're not having breakdowns, you're not playing big enough.
That's right.
When I got clear on that of course I would have multi-million dollar breakdowns now. I'm not going to have the same $100 breakdown that I had in 1994, because right. I wouldn't even notice it. You know, I sneeze and give $100 tip. So of course my breakdown has to be $1 million, because that's where I'm playing now. And so if your breakdowns are big, it's because you're playing bigger, or you're supposed to play bigger. Yes, man, when I got that. And then when I also understood that you never outgrow breakdown.
No.
There's no place to arrive to that doesn't have challenges, whether the challenges are right now. I'm interviewing with you from the back seat of my driver's car, because I'm sitting outside right now of the Beverly Hospital where my father is in, and he's getting well. And when we scheduled this interview, I had no idea that my father would be in that hospital today.
Right.
And I could choose to cancel with you and just stop life, or say, David, are you flexible? Can we interview from the back seat of the car? You know, and can life still go on in face of the unexpected? That's the question. Can life still go on and not just crawl along, not crawl along? I mean, you be the jockey and you ride it full out, ride the back of the field like you rode the first 100 yards, ride the corner and the curve the way you started the race. Can you ride even after you've been betrayed, after you've been hurt, after you've been knocked down, after you made a really stupid decision? Can you get up and ride? Like, that's what I've learned. Like, riding right now, matter of fact, I know you can relate to this. I ride now And you probably ride now with a whole nother level of determination.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But you also love differently and pray differently have gratitude, all of it. Like I was a master of determination, but now I'm a master of determination, patience, perseverance, grace. I'm working to be a master of sleep and rest the way I'm a master of run.
Yep. Yeah.
I want to be a master of 360. I was a master of making money, but I wasn't a master of health management.
Been there.
Right, right. And so now I don't need to go so hard in one area that I dominate an area. First of all, I don't need to dominate anything. I don't need. That's my ego.
Yeah.
I fed her. I fed her already. I fed what it feels like to feed the ego. Got a lot done, made a lot of money, made a lot of world impact. Got it. Now
get back in the car seat and let me drive.
Exactly. Exactly. Now I want to see what it feels like to have harmony.
Yeah.
I want to see what it feels like to be able to inspire others to play as big as they want to play versus seeing how big I can play. Does that make sense?
That's beautiful. Yeah.
In my prayer time 5 years ago, I was praying in November 2014. I got scared because I couldn't dream anymore. I didn't have a dream. And I realized I didn't have a dream for like 2 years. And I'm a dreamer. I've been dreaming for years, David. I've been like, I want this and I want this and I want to create. And I hadn't had a dream. I realized I had surpassed every dream I had had 20 years ago. I had 5X'd them. I wanted to write one book. I got 7 bestsellers. I wanted to inspire California, and I'm over in Slovenia. I didn't even know where Slovenia was on the map. I could barely say it then and now.
It's east of Philly. Right,
exactly. Exactly. And so I couldn't dream anymore. It was scary. And I didn't tell anybody. I didn't tell anyone. I started going, well, what do I do? I'm too young to not have any dreams. And so I got on my knees for days. And I'm very personal about my prayer time. And then I got on my face and I just kind of lay down flat on the ground. I was like, universe, help me. I'm scared here. I don't have a dream. And my spirit began to hear, you've hit all your marks. You wanted to be a great speaker. You're the Michael Jordan of speaking. And I say that humbly. I say that humbly.
It's true.
You're the Michael Jordan. This is what I heard in my spirit. You're the Michael Jordan of speaking. I need you to give up your dreams. Give them all up. And then literally for days, I just kept hearing, give them up, give them up. And I'm like, what does that mean? I don't know a life without dreaming. And then I begin to say, okay, God, if I give them up, what do I take? What do I, I'm a seeker. I'm a butterfly. I gotta have somewhere to go. And I begin to hear, stop being the Michael Jordan and become the Phil Jackson.
Wow.
And for anyone knowing about Phil Jackson and Michael Jordan, Phil Jackson was Michael Jordan's coach. And then my new dream was simply to help other people's dreams come true in any way that I can. I can't do every way. But it was so crazy, David, when it changed. It just, like, it felt like I had a new birth. I was excited again. And then I began to be a seeker again. What are you dreaming? What do you want to dream? How can I help that? I can't help everything, but what can I do? And so I'm in this new season where I just ask more questions now than I give information first. Yeah. And I just want to know, how can I serve you? How can I serve your community? How of service can I be? I haven't been that. Like, honestly, as giving as I am, it wasn't, asking that question wasn't the premise of my essence. It was simply a part of the journey, but it wasn't the premise. Does that make sense?
It does. Very much. Thank you for sharing that story.
Yeah, you're getting so many first things. I literally am in a place where I've gone through enough. I'm out of this crazy, scary place. I look at my popularity worldwide. I look at how people regard me, and putting it all together and settling into, okay, so how are you being responsible with that? You are a servant leader. You are a servant leader. Your job is to leave the world a better place than it was before you were born. How will you do that with who you are, who you've become, what you've learned, what you've earned? How will you use your money and your mindset and your spirituality and your health and wellness now that you have all this? Man.
That's nice. That's exciting.
Yeah. That's why when you came up to me at dinner, because believe it or not, I'm an introvert extrovert. And so I'm very outgoing in environments where I know everyone. And when I don't know everyone, I'm kind of weird. I'm very clingy to the person I know.
Right.
Because I'm just weird like that.
You were kind of huddled in with Stephanie.
There. I am. I stay huddled. And I just met Stephanie. Like she was my new friend, and we were like Klingons. And that's how I am, because I don't know. I'm kind of social. I'm socially awkward in social environments. And so when you came over to me, thank you for coming to me, because we are here because you have the courage and the intentionality to come to me. Because not that I don't want to meet people. I'm just kind of weird and nervous to go up to them. Right. And so you came to me and you were very intentional, and it was an easy yes. Yes, absolutely. Yes. And then when we left, I asked Rachel on my team, who you saw was with me. I said, yeah, well, let's find ways in 2020 to do more with him. And let's find, because I'm in this season where I don't want to partner with so many people. I would have like 60, 70 partners and clients a year. Like we're already booked through all of next year. And with events, with maybe two or three spaces left open. And I'm grateful for that level of demand. And the other part is, I don't want to just go to everywhere I'm in demand. I want to have intentional partnerships where I dive deeper with fewer people than going shallow with a lot.
Right.
And so I text Rachel on my team before we started this interview, say, I'm about to interview with David. And she's like, she goes, I want to reach out to them. I was like, please reach out to them. So it's a new season. And yeah. I'm grateful to ask myself the question, how am I of greater use and usage and servant leadership? And so I'm excited to be here with you, brother.
I'm very excited. Like I love this interview. I loved our dinner together. And when I watched you with interacting with everybody that was at that table, I saw a very gracious and grateful soul. I don't see people interact with others the way that you do that aren't grateful. You must have so much gratitude inside you. It just spills out every day because you treat people like with that saying, treat others as you wish they would treat you. You live that. Like every experience I have had with you, even the ones that you don't know about, I've witnessed you do that. I saw you do that with that woman on Larry King. It was interesting you brought that up, because I remember that. I remember seeing that after The Secret came out, because I was really interested because Bob, you know, and I knew John Assaraf and Jack and them. But
you were vested. You were personally vested.
Yeah. And it was... And that's one of the things that I would like to compliment you on, is the graciousness in which you interact with people is above anything that I've witnessed before.
Thank you. My father called me from the hospital a moment ago before we got on the phone, and he said, the nurse, Lisa, that you explained how to make the peach cobbler to, She wanted me to tell you she went home and made a peach cobbler and everyone loved it. And I laughed because I forgot. I don't know how we got on the topic of how to make a peach cobbler while I'm sitting at my father's bedside. And then he went on to say, and she recognized you when she got home and was blown away that you're the same lady she listens to on YouTube all the time.
Wow.
And thank you for the acknowledgement. I'm mindful that we're all somewhere and we're just where we are for this moment and we'll all move. We're always in an evolution. So we're changing places. We're all in a figure eight and we're in this dynamic dance together. You're in a dance with the woman who's checking you out at the grocery store. You're in a dynamic experience with them. And I truly take the responsibility seriously. Seriously. How am I contributing to your experience in this moment? Because you won't ever get this moment again. And this moment was given to both of us.
Yes.
Whether it's the person serving us at the restaurant, whether it's the ticketing agent checking me in, whether it's seat 2A on the plane, I hold it very quietly. I don't announce it unless we're talking about it.
Yeah.
But very quietly, I say, I will be good. I will do good with this time, this moment that you've given me and them, whoever they are, whether they're 20 or 60, whether they are the nurse at the hospital, or whether it's a good friend like you. I personally want to be responsible for how I leave people feeling, not how I make them feel. Bigger than how I make them feel, it's how I leave them feeling.
Yeah.
And I say, hold me responsible. And every night, I don't want to wait till I get to the end of my life, David. Every night, I want to hear, job well done, my child. In whatever our faith is, I just want to every night hear, you did good. You did good with the oxygen that I gave you. I'm an intense bird, so I go, listen, if you give me the gift of oxygen today, because if you think oxygen isn't a gift, hold your breath for a minute.
That's right.
All of a sudden, you're like, whoa, I'm so grateful for that breath. Okay, well, if you're grateful for that breath, what are you doing with it to show that you're grateful? I know I'm intense. I always say, don't let me off the hook. Hold me to the highest standard. If I don't play to the highest standard, at least I want to be at the highest level trying to get there. So don't lower your bar for me. Show me how to jump. My students, I'm never lowering the bar for you. I'll just teach you how to jump.
Yeah. That's great, Lisa. That's great. I know you have to go. I just want to ask you one thing.
Yeah.
If you could leave, this is a crazy question because you've given so much. If you could leave everybody with what I call a successful mind tip, what would it be? Something that's helped you in your lifetime.
Wow. This is going to sound crazy, but you know, I'm going to give it to you straight. No chaser. Can I break the rule and give you two?
Do. Yeah, go.
Okay. So number one is man's rejection is God's protection. That has allowed me.
Oh, that's good.
That one right there has allowed me to bounce back, to release, to hold no negative energy. It's allowed me to bless the no, welcome the no, prepare for the yes. Man's rejection is God's protection, whether it be relationship, partnership, job, opportunity. That one has helped me to get back on the saddle so many times. And the second, I have always been enough. I am enough, and I've always been enough. The only thing that needed to expand is my awareness of who I am.
Uh-huh.
The only thing that needed to expand is my awareness of who I am. I am that I am that I am. I have always been enough.
You're so beautiful.
Thank you. Those have been my personal ones, you know, and I always love to teach from what personally impacted me, because I believe that while we are different, and we need to be different, we would be very boring and very bland if we were all the same. We need our differences so that we dance more creatively together. And our likeness is where we get to show each other how we grow. Because if I share with you how I've grown, you'll find the likeness in that same belief system, and you'll use it. So our likeness is beautiful. It's understated because we get so caught up in the body bag that's brown or that's white or that's man or that's woman, the body bag that's 60 or six. And they're just body bags holding our spirit, it's holding our consciousness, holding our hearts. But your heart pumps the way my heart pumps. Your awareness, your consciousness, your evolution, your giving, we're so much more alike, brother. We're so much more alike when we take the skin off, when we take the hair off, when we take the Italian or the black off, the Baptist or the Catholic off, when That's we take right. all the titles off.
Yeah.
And we get, I'm a soul. I'm a loving being soul that wants to be loved, that wants to be honored, that wants to celebrate. And then you go, oh, I'm the same thing, you know? So, amen.
That's great. Lisa, thank you so much. It has been an honor and a pleasure. And I look forward to playing with you more this year. Let's have fun, find things to do and bless each other with.
Yeah.
God bless your father.
Thank you.
I hope that's a good situation. So
it is. It's a good situation. It's a necessary surgery, and it's one so that he can live life more comfortably. And thank you for being your flexibility to let me interview with you from the back seat of the car. And I too, I look for excuses for us to play together and call it work, for us to co-create together, to learn together, to grow together, expand together, but more importantly, to hold hands and show the world that people with our likeness and our difference not only can play together, we're designed to hold hands and play together. Until we meet again, I'm honored to call you my brother in the journey. I'm humbled and grateful for our time together. My grandmother says that your time can never be given back, and so it is the one true gift. So thank you for the gift of your time.
Thank you very much.
Be well. To you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.